to Libertarian Counterpoint. I am James Just. With me today is Mr. John Cameron. John, today we're talking about something I have been reluctant to discuss for months. We're talking the Middle East and Israel and Hamas and the Palestinians and Iraq and Iran and all the various mess that is back over there. But first, before we get into the Middle East side of this, I want to talk about how this latest Iranian attack, where they sent a bunch of drones, which was a strange attack to me, to send a bunch of drones that were going to take 8 hours to get there. How do they think most of them are going to get there? Anyway, that's another thing. But it's exposed an even greater rift on the Democrat side between those hard left Democrats who support Hamas and the Palestinians versus the more, I don't even want to say centrist Democrats, because that's not even true, the less far left Democrats.
The less wacko?
Yeah, the kind of the... And I can actually, as someone who's called a pox on both their houses, I can actually see the points from both sides. I don't know, John. But the rift that's widening between these Democrats, the far left and the center left, as I'll say for now, it's exposing a problem for Joe Biden and the Democrats come election time if this kind of sticks around. You know, there's a danger there because a lot of these people are claiming that they'll stay home. They're not going to go vote for Trump, but they may stay home. They may vote for Cornel West or someone like that just as a protest vote. Yeah, they're dependent upon the state. Yeah. So, you know, what do you think about this, the rift that this is causing? We'll get into the issues of the Middle East here in a minute, but let's talk about the rift this is causing here politically in the United States.
Well, and what's weird is, it's kind of a little history here, the Jewish political donors, Jewish votership, is that the right word? I don't know. Jewish voting, all the rest of that, for years was Democratic because the Democrats supported civil liberties. And the thing that disappeared in Nazi Germany before Jews were sent to camps and killed and their stuff taken and all the rest of that was civil liberties. Censorship, book burnings, just being segregated in ghettos based upon, you know, religion. And now the left is supporting that kind of behavior, and the people on the right are promoting civil liberties and not promoting segregation based on race or religion. So it's really, it's just weird.
Yeah, it's just weird because I don't trust the right.
I don't trust the, I mean, the Republicans don't even stand for anything now except for they are defending First Amendment rights and the left.
Defending First Amendment rights because Democrats aren't. I think they're just playing oppositional politics with that. I don't think they care two cents about it. I just don't think they do.
It's weird that because the Democrats march more in lockstep than the Republicans do. I mean, you will see, like right now, I mean, there's 17 Republicans at least who don't want to do anything because they want, they don't want to send these forever wars. They want a balanced budget. And these are people that, you know, the Republicans were always the hawks, you know, the warmongers. So it's weird. And it is going to hurt Biden. Can't we just leave the presidency unoccupied? Just, you know?
Well, maybe we could rent Javier Milei. We'll get to Javier Milei here in a bit.
Yeah.
But we're talking, all right, so we're going to go move to the Middle East. Biden has done something that has never happened before in the history of our defense of Israel, and he's sending U.S. troops to protect Israel's borders, not just to defend that little jetty they're making for the in Palestine, in Gaza, so they can get some supplies in there through
No, that's just a cover for a future U.S. military base.
Yeah, and now they're actually putting U.S. forces in Israel's border.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're actually getting in the line of fire, deliberately.
And we've had, and our ships have been in the line of fire, and our fighter aircraft been in the line of fire, and we have anti-aircraft units in Iraq, I think, and maybe even Syria that were shooting down some of those drones as they were coming. So we don't have combat troops on the ground yet, but we got people who are in harm's way there that are wearing American uniforms. And yet another, I mean, this is obviously the tail wagging the dog here. It's, you know, let's distract the American people from the horrible mess that we're making domestically, from the fact that we're unwilling to, even though I disagree with it, secure our own borders that we're required to by law. And let's go get involved in another forever war. But you know, Biden sent a strongly worded message to Iran about, you know, they're going to do some more sanctions on their drones, so they can't do this anymore.
Yeah, like that's good. Like Iran's already been one of the most sanctioned countries on the globe, mm-hmm. and they had no problem making these drones in the first place.
Not at all.
And didn't Biden just give them a bunch of money?
Oh yeah.
Just not a couple of years ago, billions of dollars, if my memory serves. We just gave them the money to purchase these drones.
I don't think we gave it to them. We stopped taking it from them, really. And we let them have their own money back.
It's hard. Yeah, man.
But who knows? But they're printing all of it anyway, so it's not really money.
What a tangled web we weave. It's such an abstract disaster. Well, and I think, as we were talking just before the show started, you heard that Israel actually
counterattacked,
had some kind of counterattack.
All the crazy lefties in Congress and elsewhere are going to say that once again, you know, Israel is an aggressor who's bringing war and bombing children in Iran and all the rest of these places, and completely ignore the 300 drones plus hypersonic missiles plus all the other stuff that happened. But I don't know what they're doing, but I heard on the radio on the way in, I think it was on NPR, so who knows if it was true or not, since they don't care about the truth anymore, that Israel was doing something. And I couldn't get the story up on my phone in time to interject as part of this thing here. Yeah.
And well, as many of our libertarian friends would say, the best thing for the United States to do is to not be in this mess. Mm-hmm. It's if we hadn't gotten involved
GTFO.
In this mess in this yeah in the yeah. first place, we would all be better off. And as we talk about
An
getting
STFO.
Ourselves
stay the
yes out. Stay the something out. Yeah. But we've got. Talking about messes, we've got inflation is a mess, and our friend Mr. Richard Fields has something to say about inflation. So, Mr. Fields, what do you have to say today?
We're going to be able to hear him. That's cool.
This is Richard Fields with this week's report from the fields. And I'm here to report to you with near certainty that inflation is not going away anytime soon. Last week, the headline CPI number came in at 3.5% year over year. That's up from 3.2% last month. The trend is moving in the wrong direction and away from the Fed's 2% inflation goal. And to expect otherwise would be a fool's errand or a Wall Street sales pitch. The Fed can decrease inflation in only two ways. It can raise interest rates, usually short-term interest rates. Raising rates usually leads to less borrowing on the part of consumers and businesses, which causes less final demand for consumer goods. Notice I did not say raising interest rates causes less government borrowing. I'll get back to that interesting dichotomy later. Less demand for the same amount of production leads to lower prices, all else equal. Or the Fed can lower the amount of direct lending it does. They do that by selling bonds, usually federal treasury bonds, but in recent years, mortgage-backed securities and other lower quality securities. By making bond sales, the Fed is effectively increasing the amount of debt held by the private sector and thereby decreasing ultimate consumer demand and erasing or easing inflationary pressures. The Wall Street sales pitch is that inflation is coming down, so the Fed can start to cut interest rates. The problem is inflation stopped coming down well before it reached the Fed's 2% target. Cutting rates now would almost certainly cause future inflation rates to further increase. The Fed has already stopped mopping up credit by selling bonds. It's buying again. And the well-telegraphed Fed intention to cut interest rates three times this year is now being questioned by Wall Street. That's why the stock market has been crashing the last few days. You see, the stock market thrives on loose money. Low interest rates make it lucrative for speculators to borrow at low rates, to buy stocks, betting they will continue to go up, making profits for speculators and long-term investors alike. High interest rates choke off that demand to buy stocks, and all else equal, lead to lower stock prices. So the Fed has caught itself inside its own trap. Through ultra-loose money, near-zero interest rates, and quantitative easing, or the Fed purchase of debt from private bondholders, the Fed has facilitated the 9% inflation of recent memory. They raised interest rates and engaged in quantitative tightening, or Fed sale of debt to private holders, facilitating the drop in inflation to February's 3.2%. Just as they started patting themselves on the back and said, we've done our job of taming inflation here, the market said, not so fast. There's still a huge ocean of newly created Fed funny money floating around the market, and it's being spent, causing inflation to trend up once again. Fed, you're a long way from done. We're selling our stocks and bonds in anticipation of interest rates going up rather than down. Hence, stocks crashing and 10-year treasuries going up nearly 1% in the last 3 months. The Fed is between a rock and a hard place. If they go through with their telegraphed intentions to cut rates, inflation will continue to rebound, possibly to hyperinflationary territory. And remember, the only sector of the economy that has not reduced spending due to higher interest rates is the federal government. They instead are increasing spending, treasury borrowing, and at higher interest expense. Plus, maturing treasuries cannot be repaid. They have to be replaced at higher interest rates. In fact, interest expense is now on a par with military spending at the federal. As the Fed raises rates, the financial markets will go down and unemployment will go up in an election year. The Congress and both Trump and Biden are clueless or don't care about the country's growing debt problem. Total debt is now approaching 130% of gross domestic product. That has happened to 52 countries in the past. 51 of those countries went bankrupt in one way or another, either through outright default on their treasuries or through hyperinflation, which is effectively a regressive tax increase. Which way do you think the wind is blowing? My guess is that the Fed will hold rates steady, hoping for that elusive soft landing. I say good luck with that, and I will further predict that a year or maybe two or three years from now, 3% or even 4% inflation will become the new normal. After all, remember, inflation is just a regressive tax that politicians don't have to leave their fingerprints on. This is Richard Fields with this week's Report from the Fields. See you again next week.
So, well, thank you, Richard. That was pretty good. Who came up with that graphic? That's great.
Anthony and the AI, actually. So for those of you who don't know, when you see the scrolls come down the thing, Anthony just, he did that, worked with AI for a couple hours to get some of those.
Wow, that's excellent. That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's almost like Richard looking out over his farm.
Yeah, he said he likes the ones with the, Richard said he likes the ones with the silo in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, inflation is not a pretty picture. Not nearly as pretty as that.
No.
I guess is the point Richard was trying to make, is we've got an inflationary problem. And as we've been saying here for, 4 years now, you know, this is not unexpected. When you print a bunch of money.
It's not. I'm just shocked that it's that the numbers are as good, even though they're bad, as less bad as they are. Maybe.
Well, remember, the official numbers are cooked. They don't count like food and energy.
They change the way they're reported based upon who's in power, and to show things in a good light, and then they change them again to show the previous administration in a bad light, and then they change them again. Well, anyway, on and on and on. So, but and inflation is the cruelest and most regressive tax of all, and it's the one that could be most easily cut by governments actually doing what you and I are required to do, which is balancing our budget. I mean, anybody who's ever had to pay off a big debt, especially at a high interest rate, who's chosen to do that rather than bankrupt, knows how tough that can be. You put yourself on a strict budget, you forego vacations, you don't buy toys, you keep the old car, you maybe cut down to one car. We're doing none of that. The government refuses to see that spending more money than it brings in is a bad thing. And they refuse to acknowledge that every single time in history, as Richard said, 51 out of 52 times that a country has hit 130% of GDP, you know, they've gone bankrupt pretty quickly. I mean, we're worse than Greece right now when the IMF bailed Greece out. And since we basically fund the IMF, who's going to bail us out?
Yeah, there's nobody to turn to. There's no bigger pockets, and that's the problem. The bigger pockets is us. And And every person born starts with, what is it now,
$89,000
in debt, something like that, depending upon which calculations you're using. Yeah, so we're going to move on. The defense spending continues to spiral out of control, which is interesting. We're talking about the spending out of control, but, you know, interest debt, the payments, just the interest on our national debt, $34 trillion of debt, is equivalent now to our defense spending. So as much as our defense spending is out of control, the rest of our spending is even worse.
And a big part of that debt is on our previous defense spending. Our foreign wars have cost us, what, $11 trillion? Our forever wars have cost us somewhere between $7 and $11 trillion. And so the interest on that debt is part of the debt we're paying off. We are spending in the U.S. The same on defense. And not even all of this is covered, because the VA isn't even covered under this number. We're spending $850 billion on defense next year. And that's not even counting the bribery and corruption. The next seven countries, China, India, Russia, the Ukraine, the Great Britain, France, Germany, I mean, all the major spenders in the world, Korea, we're spending the same amount of money the next seven do. And everybody defends it, saying, well, quality, you know, quality over quantity. No, we're not getting quality.
We're not getting either.
we're getting $130 million helicopters. I mean, that's crazy, man. And it's just we are padding so many pockets with our defense spending. I'll tell you what, I could get the same mission accomplished for half of that money in about a week. First, just bring all the troops home. Let the rest of the world take care of itself, man. Yep. It's not our job to be, since we're the bad guy in a lot of places we go into anyway, let's just be the good guy by leaving. You know, let's just, if China and Russia want to invade the U.S., fine, put all those people on boats or a whole bunch of airplanes, because we're going to shoot them all down anyway, and then send them across the Pacific or the Atlantic or have them land in Antarctica and walk up or whatever, and we'll defend our borders. You know, we don't It's crazy. And then you add, I just looked it up, I'm a vet, right? Veterans Administration somehow spends $430 billion in addition to that $850 billion.
Yeah, and it's not like it's going to the vets.
No, well, I mean, I don't know if you've, it's just for fun, go visit a VA hospital. And I want you to, they're not gold-plated toilets these people are crapping on here. I mean, I don't know where this money's going, but it is not reaching the people it's supposed to reach.
But John, there is hope. There is hope on the horizon.
There is there's some hope.
There's some hope on the horizon.
We got a couple of hopes in here I want to talk about.
There's a couple of them. One is Javier Milei and Elon Musk kind of got a chance to get together.
Got a romance going. Yo.
Yeah, those are a pair. one is, Javier Milei is preaching, he's doing what he said, right? Mm-hmm. He's doing exactly what he said he would do. Now, he can't go as far as he would like because, no one has...
Well, he says that if he would have taken him off the peso and put him on the dollar, he'd be in prison. He said, I know that's not happening. If I tried to do that, they'd throw me in prison. So some of his stuff isn't going to fly.
Yeah. So there are some limits to what he can do, but he is
doing
walking
what
he can. The
walk.
He's walking the walk.
Yeah.
He eliminated half of his departments, consolidated others.
Yeah.
He laid off 70,000 government workers because their jobs are either redundant or not necessary in the first place. Hmm. And so him and Elon Musk got together and they're working on revitalizing the markets of Argentina. They're trying to figure out the plans how to revitalize these markets of Argentina. And what's astounding is how much these markets have revitalized themselves just by the government getting the heck out of the way.
Not astounding at all. I mean, look what happened in China when the Chinese planned central plan of their markets and everything backed off. And as long as you kowtowed to the Chinese Communist Party and said that you're a hardcore communist and didn't talk trash about the chairman, they'd let you do whatever you wanted to do, almost, within reason-ish. And boom, booming economy in China. And this is supposedly a communist country. But, the minute you talk trash about leadership, all of a sudden, you're guilty of corruption in prison, or somehow you disappear on a trip somewhere.
Yeah, but now China's economy is struggling because there's no more foreign investment, and foreign investment has dried up because you can't risk it. It's too big of a risk. It'll just be taken away at the snap of the fingers
kinda
and
like
the whim of...
Kind of like what's happening in New York City.
Oh, yes.
If you're a Republican.
Oh, not just New York City. We're actually going to move on. A Democrat mayor, St. Louis mayor, the Democrat mayor of St. Louis, let me get this straight, is trying to hold business owners accountable for the criminals that commit crimes on their property.
Yeah.
So if someone, say, smashes and grabs your store, you are somehow responsible for the criminals smashing and grabbing your store.
Well, no, you're somehow supposed to prevent crime from happening, even though people can do that stuff, and in California, for example, up to $999, they can just take and walk out, and it's a misdemeanor. But somehow, you are supposed to stop them from doing that without, in California anyway. I don't know what's happening here. It's probably pretty close. But St. Louis has always been a tough, tough place. I mean, a lot of murders, a lot of violent crime, and it's gone up, I think, 30% since this mayor took over. And, businesses are fleeing. Businesses have always avoided, downtown St. Louis, tough place. Yeah. So I have no idea how you can be responsible for stopping crime when your hands are tied behind your back about doing anything about it. You can't, I'm willing to bet in St. Louis they're not stupid enough to have a law. Is that Missouri?
Yeah.
Stupid enough to have a law that says you can do a smash and grab and walk out with $990 worth of stuff, and basically nothing's going to happen to you.
I don't know. It's a Democrat city. Why would it be any different than San Francisco?
State of California, you mean?
Well, even if Missouri, St. Louis doesn't have to prosecute. Just because the law's there doesn't mean they're going to prosecute.
That's true.
It just means they'll You know, they'll no belt warrant the guy and off they go.
Yeah.
And commit another one. As New York is finding out, most of the crimes are committed by a relatively handful of people. A
couple 300 people commit most of the retail theft or organized theft rings in most crime. You know, and at one time it was like 300 families. And I'm not talking about the mafia, I'm just talking about other people. You know, and we have it, I mean,
those are the ones California that were literally, too. You can solve a lot of crime by just keeping those people in jail.
Yeah.
You know, you're not talking about a lot of these laws, policies were made because people didn't want to see someone who's struggling to feed their family go to jail because they stole some food, right? Mm. And no one wants to see that, and not including us. But we're not talking about that.
No.
And the fact that we can't be sophisticated enough in our conversations, in our policing, and in our prosecutions to know the difference is astounding to me.
Well, and the fact that one of the ways people, let's say minority people, people of color, bootstrap themselves is by starting a small, like a liquor store or, you know, a little, what do they call them in New York? They got all these little corner grocery stores, bodegas. And they're the ones that are hurt the worst by this because they don't have the overheads, the margins, all the rest of that. Somebody comes in and steals $1,000 worth of their stuff.
It's coming straight from their pocket.
Yeah.
They don't have insurance to cover that. Well, or if they did, they can't.
What are their premiums in a place like that? If the police won't prevent that kind of crime and that's their job, what is it? I want to make sure we got time to get to.
Yeah, we're going to get to the next
one.
Next one. So Biden has hinted at freedom for Julian Assange. Now I want to warn everybody. This is a, you know,
hint.
It's a hint at best, and you know this is one of those things. It's a trial balloon to see if it's going to help his reelection chances.
Well,
let's not pretend anything different.
But there's something else going on here, which leads me to believe that it might actually happen. The U.S. is all aghast at the threat of China in Southeast Asia, in Asia, and they need Australia. You know, we're getting ready to give, I don't know, billions of dollars worth of nuclear submarines to Australia to defend Australia, you know, because somehow this is going to help stop China. And the Australians have been, because he's an Australian citizen, and he's a kind of a bad actor in a lot of ways. He's hard to like. He's not a very likable guy. He's, you know, a philanderer and he's just kind of an ass, really. But because they want Australia's help in this, fighting China, there's a chance it's going to happen. And now a lot of the major media that said he wasn't really a reporter are starting to realize, wait a second, oh, the next time one of our reporters steals some information from the government and publish it, maybe we're going to go to jail. And maybe go to prison for spying.
Yeah, maybe they should have thought of that a long, long time ago, and we wouldn't be sitting here having these conversations.
No, I think they should induct him into the military and give him the Medal of Honor. Julian Assange.
All right. John, I think we are just about out of time, if my looking of the clock is correct. Thank you for being here. Thank everybody in there for working so hard tonight. Thank you for watching. Have a good night, and please remember to love everybody.
Thank you very much. I went off on a rant. I forgot we only had 3 minutes left.
You're all good. We were somehow...